Okay, so get this. We're going to dive into a case, and it's a case that'll make you think twice about video evidence. Imagine, okay, you're facing a 75-year sentence, and the star witness, the big one, against you is, get this, a video camera.
Wow, 75 years.
Yeah, wild, right. And that's what happened in Wagner v. State.
Wagner v. State.
Yeah, Florida case. And it really kind of pushes the boundaries of how we use video evidence in court.
Interesting. You know, what I think is so fascinating about this case is the person who actually recorded the video, right? The confidential informant.
Yeah.
Completely missing from the trial.
Hold on. A missing informant.
So
how, I mean, how did they even get a conviction? I mean, this sounds like a legal thriller or something.
Well, that's where the silent witness theory comes in.
Silent witness.
Yeah. Think of it like this, you know, just like fingerprints or DNA. You've heard of those, right? They can speak for themselves.
Right.
So the court decided that in certain situations, a video can be its own powerful form of evidence, even without the person who filmed it there to testify.
Okay, but I'm guessing it can't be just any video, right? I mean, there must be some pretty strict rules, right?
Absolutely. In Wagner v. State, the court laid out very specific criteria to make sure that the video was, you know, reliable, authentic, and hadn't been tampered with.
Okay.
Had to be handled carefully.
So let's back up for a sec, okay?
Bye.
Can we get the full picture? What actually happened in this case?
Sure. So we're in Bay County, Florida.
Okay.
We've got this officer, Officer Duncan. He suspects Arthur Wagner III of selling cocaine.
Okay.
So he sets up a sting operation, uses a confidential informant wired with a hidden camera in her car.
Classic undercover work. Yeah, I mean, but I'm already kind of intrigued by this whole silent witness angle.
Okay, so here's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
The informant makes three separate drug buys from Wagner. Okay, all captured on this hidden camera.
Three buys. Wow, that's building a case.
Right. So each time the informant searched beforehand, given marked money, then sent to buy from Wagner. Well, Officer Duncan, you know, he's following discreetly. And the video shows the exchanges, the money changing hands, the informant returning each time with a rock of cocaine.
Okay, so we've got some pretty damning footage.
Yeah.
But then the informant disappears.
Right.
I mean, that throws a major wrench into things, doesn't it?
It does. At the trial, the informant is nowhere to be found.
Wow.
So to get a conviction, the prosecution relied on that silent witness theory, arguing that the video alone was enough to prove Wagner's guilt.
I'm guessing this raised a ton of legal questions.
Uh-huh.
I mean, could a video really send someone to prison for 75 years?
That's precisely what Wagner's defense argued.
Yeah.
They claimed that even though the video showed someone selling drugs, you couldn't be absolutely sure it was him.
So like a mistaken identity defense.
Yeah, kind of.
But with video, that seems like a tough sell.
It was. The prosecution had another witness who positively identified Wagner from the video. Plus, the court, they zeroed in on specific details from the footage, like the way Wagner approached the car, the way the exchanges took place.
Right.
And they concluded that, yes, it was indeed Wagner selling the drugs.
So they found enough evidence to connect Wagner to the crime, even without the informant's testimony. But let's talk about that 75-year sentence.
Yeah.
That feels incredibly harsh, especially if it's, like, based mostly on a video.
That is where things get even more complex. The severity of the sentence wasn't just about the drug sales.
Right.
It was heavily influenced by Florida's habitual offender statute.
Now, I've heard of these statutes.
All right.
But for, you know, for our listeners who aren't, you know, legal experts, can you break down how that works?
Sure. Essentially, these laws allow for much tougher penalties for repeat offenders. So if you've been convicted of certain felonies before, you're labeled a habitual offender. And any new felony conviction, that can lead to a drastically longer sentence.
So in Wagner's case,
he had previous violent felonies on his record. That triggered the habitual offender statute, making him eligible for that massive 75-year sentence. Even though, you know, selling cocaine near a school isn't technically a violent crime itself.
Wow. So his past convictions are playing a huge role here. But is that fair?
Right.
It feels like he's being punished twice, like once for the current charges and again for past mistakes.
That's a huge debate surrounding habitual offender laws.
Right.
Some argue that they're crucial for public safety, keeping repeat offenders off the streets.
Oh.
Others say, you know, they can be incredibly unfair and don't really address the root causes of crime.
Yeah. This case definitely raises some big questions about, you know, balancing punishment with rehabilitation.
Yeah.
So before we were talking about Wagner's task convictions, right?
Right.
And how those led to a much harsher sentence, thanks to Florida's habitual offender law.
Uh-huh.
But let's rewind a bit.
Okay.
The defense, they actually tried some interesting tactics to challenge the prosecution's case.
Yeah.
Especially since that key informant was missing.
Right. Wagner's lawyer, he wanted to dig into the informant's past.
Yeah.
You know, he tried to question Officer Duncan about her previous encounters with the law,
yeah.
maybe suggesting she had a reason to lie or set Wagner up or something, you know.
The classic discredit the witness strategy. Right. But if she wasn't even there to testify, how did that work?
Well, the trial court, they shut down that line of questioning.
Really?
Yeah. They ruled that any past issues the informant might have had were irrelevant to this specific case.
Wait, so even though she wasn't there, her past was still off limits. I'm trying to like wrap my head around that.
I mean, the judge was basically saying, you know, let's focus on the evidence directly related to these drug buys, not on the informant's, you know, personal history.
Right.
And remember, the star of the show was that video footage.
Okay, that makes sense. Stick to the facts at hand. But this brings up another question for me. We've been talking about these three separate drug buys,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Were they treated as three separate crimes, or did they all get like lumped together?
That's another fascinating layer of this case.
Yeah.
All three charges against Wagner, so two counts of selling cocaine near a school and one count of, you know, just selling cocaine.
Right.
They were actually combined into one trial. Legally, you know, this is called consolidation.
Consolidation. So,
yeah.
So we said at three separate trials, they just like rolled it all into one. Why would they do that?
Well, I mean, think about it from a practical standpoint, right? Three separate trials for essentially the same crime, using the same evidence and witnesses.
Right.
It would be incredibly, incredibly time-consuming and expensive. Consolidation can, you know, streamline things.
I mean, that's true from like a logistical perspective, but wouldn't that be unfair to the defendant?
Yeah.
It seems like it would be easy for a jury to think, well, he did it three times, so he must be guilty.
Yeah, it's definitely a balancing act. You know, the court has to weigh the efficiency of consolidation against the potential for prejudice against the defendant.
Right.
In this case, they felt that the three drug buys were so close together, you know, all within an hour, same location, same method, that they were basically part of one continuous criminal act.
So instead of like viewing it as three distinct crimes, they saw it as a single like a burst of criminal activity.
Exactly. And they decided that combining the charges wouldn't, you know, confuse the jury or unfairly bias them against Wagner.
Okay.
They believed the evidence was strong enough to support each charge individually.
Interesting. So even though there were like technically three separate acts, the court decided to treat them as one event for the sake of efficiency. It makes you wonder how often this happens in legal cases.
Well, consolidation is a strategy lawyers should definitely keep in mind. You know, if you can demonstrate that multiple charges stem from the same criminal episode, you might be able to streamline the trial process.
That's a useful insight for any legal eagles listening in.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've covered the silent witness idea, the standard for sufficient evidence, the restrictions on questioning the informant, and now this concept of consolidating charges.
Mm.
What's the big takeaway from all of this?
Well, Wagner v. State, it really underscores how influential video evidence can be in criminal cases. It shows that a well-documented video, even without the person who recorded it there to testify, can be extremely convincing to a jury.
I imagine there are also downsides to relying so heavily on video, though, right?
Right. Yeah.
What if the camera malfunctions or the footage is taken out of context or even intentionally misleading?
Those are incredibly valid concerns. You know, yeah. we have to be careful not to view video evidence as some kind of, you know, infallible truth.
Right.
It's just one piece of the puzzle, and it can be manipulated, misinterpreted, or even used to invade people's privacy.
It's almost like a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah.
Video can provide clear, objective evidence, but it can also be like twisted or used in harmful ways.
Mm. And that's why cases like Wagner v. State are so important. You know, they force us to grapple with these questions and develop legal frameworks that balance the benefits of video evidence with the need to, you know, protect individual rights and ensure fairness in our justice system.
Lots to think about for sure. But let's get back to the core question of our deep dive.
Right. Right?
Like, can a video actually convict you?
Based on what we've seen in Wagner v. State, the answer seems to be a resounding yes.
Okay.
At least under the right circumstances.
So what are those circumstances? I mean, what makes video evidence so compelling in the eyes of the law? And most importantly, what steps can you take to protect yourself if you're ever facing, like, similar charges?
Yeah.
All right. So we're back and ready to kind of wrap up our deep dive into the world of video evidence.
You got it. We've been spending some time with Wagner v. State,
right?
A case that really drives home how a video, even without the person holding the camera, can lead to a 75-year sentence.
I mean, this has been a wild ride. We've really gotten to dissect all the legal twists and turns.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It is. And we've uncovered some pretty complex legal concepts along the way.
Yeah, like we delved into that whole silent witness theory.
All right.
Explored the standards for sufficient evidence, unpacked those habitual offender laws, just to name a few.
Yeah, exactly. But let's bring it all home for our listeners. You know, what does this case actually mean for folks out there in the real world?
Okay.
What are the key takeaways from our deep dive?
Well, if there's one overarching message, it's that, you know, video evidence is just becoming increasingly important in our legal system.
Yeah, it's everywhere these days. I mean, you've got security cameras, dash cams, smartphones. I mean, we're all being recorded constantly, whether we realize it or not.
Exactly.
It's almost like a digital panopticon out there.
Right. And as this case shows, right, that footage can have, you know, serious, even life-altering legal consequences.
So what can people do to protect themselves in this world of ubiquitous cameras?
Well, I think awareness is key. You know, just be mindful of your surroundings. Always assume you're being recorded, especially in public spaces or during interactions with, you know, with law enforcement.
Yeah. It's almost like we need to develop a digital version of covering your tracks.
Right, exactly. If you're ever in a situation that could lead to legal trouble, you know, remember that video evidence might come into play.
Right.
And if you're recording something yourself, be sure you're doing it legally and ethically, you know?
Yeah, good point. Don't go setting up hidden cameras or filming people without understanding the potential legal, you know, ramifications.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you ever find yourself, you know, facing charges based on video evidence, seek out an experienced attorney who understands this complex area of the law.
Yeah, because as we've seen, you know, with this Wagner v. State, the admissibility of video evidence can be challenged.
Absolutely.
There are specific rules and procedures that have to be followed.
Right.
And a skilled lawyer can help you navigate those rules and build the strongest possible defense.
For sure.
Okay. So before we wrap up, I have one more thought-provoking question to kind of throw out there.
Okay, hit me.
So we know the informant in this case was missing from the trial. Right.
Right.
But what if she had testified?
Hmm.
Do you think that could have changed the outcome at all?
That's a fascinating hypothetical. It's impossible to say for sure, but it certainly could have shifted the dynamics of the case.
I mean, maybe her testimony would have, you know, solidified the video evidence, made the prosecution's case even more ironclad.
Yeah, that's possible. Or maybe the defense could have used her testimony to raise doubts about the video's reliability or the circumstances surrounding those drug buys.
It's like the butterfly effect.
Yeah.
One small change could have, you know, rippled throughout the entire trial.
Right. And you know, even if the informant had testified, the silent witness theory, it would still be relevant. It's about the reliability of the recording itself, not just whether the person who filmed it is present in court.
So in a way, Wagner v. State, it sets a precedent for how video evidence might be used in the future.
Yeah.
It shows that under the right conditions, a video can truly speak for itself. even without a human witness to back it up.
Right. And you know, as technology keeps advancing, we'll likely see even more cases like this, mm-hmm. where video evidence plays a pivotal role in determining the outcome of legal proceedings.
It's a brave new world out there, and understanding the power and the potential pitfalls of video evidence is crucial for anyone navigating the legal landscape.
Absolutely. So stay informed, be aware of your surroundings, and if you're ever in doubt, you know, seek legal counsel, because in our increasingly digital age, what you don't know can hurt you.
That's all the time we have for today's deep dive. We hope this episode has given you a better understanding of the complex world of video evidence and its growing impact on the criminal justice system.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
We'll catch you on the flip side.